Welcome to our second mini-sode, where we talk about women who celebrate their birthday during the week that we release the episode, and we will talk about some sweets with Eva or anything that's closely related to the theme of our podcast. For the birthdays today, I'm gonna start with maybe a controversial one. Her name is Rita Leroy. She was born on the 11th of September 1913, and she worked first as secretary, and then she moved to Switzerland because she married a Swiss guy. And there she went back to school, got her diplomas, passed the state exams, and worked as an assistant doctor in 1941. She worked in various clinics, and especially the one in Alesheim. It's also a pretty special hospital because it's the only anthroposophical hospital in Switzerland at that time. But there she worked on a mistletoe therapy, iskador therapy for the treatment of cancer. In 1951, she was elected to the board of the Cancer Research Association, and she founded the Lucas Clinics, this kind of an add-on to the hospital that's already there in Alesheim, as a center for anthroposophic tumor therapy. So on one hand, it's committed to like integrative oncology. So conventional school medicine is then combined with anthroposophical medicine. And by 1968, the clinic had expanded to a total of 46 beds. And she really tried during her lifetime to make this mistletoe therapy known both nationally and internationally, and sought approval for this iskador in various countries. And she then passed away a few days before her 75th birthday due to a brain hemorrhage. Yeah, so what's your opinion on anthroposophical therapies?
I think it's always a good idea to look at plants, to look at what kind of molecules and compounds they contain and whether they might be useful for treatment of diseases. And I, fun fact, just yesterday I prepared for our next episode, which will be about Asima Chatterjee. And she was really also one of the big pioneers in phytomedicine. And so I learned that many plants have fantastic compounds that can exactly be used to treat cancer. So first of all, I think it's a good idea to look at mistletoe and see whether that might be used for a treatment. If you say that, for example, this clinic uses a lot of different approaches to treat people, like conventional medicines against tumor, but then also a more complementary approach, that to me sounds like quite a good idea, because it treats them, not only the symptoms, but the whole human being. That said, I think every kind of therapy should be very thoroughly, the effects should be very thoroughly researched, and it should be made sure that it's actually helpful and that there's not a different type of treatment available that would be even more helpful for that particular case.
Yes, and now I maybe have to admit, I actually see like my regular doctor is actually an anthroposophical one. But there's a big but though. The whole clinic where I go to is also part of this Ita Wegmann Ambulatorium, which is part of this clinic in Alesheim. There I have the choice. Every time he tells me maybe I have to take some vitamins and stuff like that, he asks me, do I want them as kind of school medicine or do I want them as anthroposophical medicine? And every time I say school medicine, because I once made the mistake to say anthroposophical medicine. They gave me a bag of this powder and I had to mix so much of this powder into water and drink it every morning, and it was really, really disgusting. And my boyfriend was a pharmacist. He told me, well, you could have just taken one single pill every morning, which would be the exact same thing. But instead, you have to drink this muddy thing every morning.
Oh, no.
But I really like my doctor because, as you said, he looks at the person more integral, which is really nice, because actually he takes time to actually talk to you and not just get you out of the door. So that's really cool.
Thanks, Beatrice. So now I'm curious whom you chose next.
Now we're going to the US again. Her name is Mary Watson Whitney. She is a US-American astronomer, and she was born on the 11th of September, 1847.
1847, oh, that's a long time ago.
Already when she grew up, she had an aptitude for study, and her teacher always praised her skill in mathematics, which you will probably like, Eva.
Yeah, I'm all for maths.
She She graduated from public high school and then she entered Vassar College. And she then traveled to see a solar eclipse and she got really interested in astronomy and she attended, on invitation of course, another class in Harvard and got to study in his private class, which was not common for a woman during that time. And in 1872, she got her master's degree. Then she actually came to Switzerland. She studied math over here and celestial mechanics at the University of Zurich.
Oh, okay. What year was that?
1873 to 76.
Oh, so the University of Zurich accepted women by that time?
Apparently.
Oh, nice. Good to know.
She then went back to assist Maria Mitchell, and in 1888 she succeeded her as a professor, and then she became the director of the astronomy studies and the college observatory. And she proved to be a very popular teacher, and she developed it into a very ambitious research program, and all of her students got placed in very prominent places when they studied under her. So that's kind of her achievement.
Wow. Well, that sounds almost like a modern academic career. You go to university, then you go abroad, you refine your research skills, you go back, and then, you just make it up the ladder. That's very fascinating, although, well, it's 100 years back.
Yes, very impressive.
Yeah, we definitely have to make an episode about some of the very fascinating women astronomers one day. I read whole books about some of them, and it's really extremely... Well, astronomy in itself is a very fascinating subject, and how it developed, and then the stories of the women behind it. Really fascinating. We have to do that soon.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. And as for episode ideas, I have a big one, because the next person I'm going to talk to you about is Irène Joliot-Curie.
Oh, okay.
When I read about her life, I thought, oh my God, we should do like this huge, big episode of this family, because not only did she win a Nobel Prize in chemistry, they were the second ever married couple to receive the Nobel Prize, just after her own parents.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole family in total has 5 Nobel Prizes, which is the most any family ever got.
Yeah, wow, fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably that's not only one episode. It sounds more like 5 episodes.
That could be a whole series on its own, yeah.
Exactly.
So her birthday was on the 12th of September in 1897 in Paris. Irène is the oldest of the children of Marie Curie and her husband Pierre Curie. She, of course, was also really interested in science, like her mother and her father, and she was already asked to teach at a very early age. She was asked to teach a young chemical engineer, Frédéric Joliot, and him she would later marry. They combined their research efforts and on the study of the atomic nuclei.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started to read about her research, I was just like, oh my God. This is kind of Eva's thing.
Yeah.
They are involved in so many research areas, so many breakthroughs. It's really interesting.
Wow, yeah. Definitely look forward to diving deeper into this topic and then discovering or rediscovering the science behind it, because I'm sure at some point in a school or university, I knew a lot more about it than I do now. So time for a refresher.
In 1934, that's when they made their discovery that gave them the Nobel Prize. So they managed to turn one element into another, so kind of the alchemist dream. So they created radioactive nitrogen from boron, radioactive isotopes of phosphorus from aluminium, and silicon from magnesium.
But no straw into gold?
Unfortunately not.
Oh. No, that's still an open topic, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I found really interesting is that the Joliot-Curies, they continued the famous policy of kind of publishing all of the work kind of immediately for the benefit of the global scientific community. But they were also really aware of the fascist uprise during their lifetime. So afraid of the danger that might result if someone kind of abuses this for military powers. They stopped publishing, and in 1939 they actually placed all of their documentation in nuclear fissions in the walls of the French Academy of Science, and it remained there until 1949.
Oh, so it actually did work out to put it into the vaults. Well, in case that any of our listeners are close to Warsaw, there's an amazing museum, mostly about Marie Curie, but also about her whole family. I was there a couple of years back, and I can really recommend going. It's a very interesting exhibition.
Working so closely with this radioactive material caught up with her, and she was diagnosed with leukemia. She had a series of treatments and operations, but in the end, she passed away at the age of 54.
Well, dear listeners, do not play with radioactive materials at home.
Although it does lead to having the most Nobel Prizes in one family ever received, but yes, that's a big price to pay.
Proceed at your own peril. Oh, thank you so much, Beatrice. Those were really interesting. And again, women with such diverse backgrounds, that's fantastic.
See you for another big episode. And until then,
stay defiant.
You can find our sources in the show notes. If you enjoy the show and want to help us grow, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.